Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. This is the Donalana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. Welcome. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We're here to talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, opinions. Lots of things.
The weather.
On this radio show.
Yes. All the important stuff.
All the important stuff. And this is a community radio station. It's put together by people who volunteer to do this. We're here because we want to be. And we get lots of support from our community, too.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames, everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
Thank you, Will. That was Will Bonfilio, and you'll hear a bit about him later. Today we'll explore the joy of root beer, and Donna has some thoughts on oxtail tureen. So stick around. Things will be tasty here in just a minute. First, I have some thoughts on Labor Day. Yesterday was Labor Day. We had a nice lazy, at least I did, a lazy Labor Day weekend.
I labored way too much.
And Donna labored. She did some house moving.
For my son.
Oh.
All what good mothers do. You know, your children move, adult children, and you go in and you wipe up all the dirty cupboards and you wrap up all the fine glassware and you make sure that when the tabletop arrives, it's blanketed appropriately. I'm exhausted. I labored.
You're a saint. You're a saint. That's good.
Only occasionally.
Well, here's some thoughts on Labor Day. I was thinking about why people get around and barbecue and have a day off and go out on their boats and do things on this day. Well, Labor Day was first signed into being by President Grover Cleveland in July 1894, and that sounds like he was doing everybody a good turn, but do remember this. He did that in response to the outrage and the horror that he caused by breaking the Pullman strike of 1894. He called out 12,000 U.S. Army troops to crush the historic Pullman strike, which was led by Union organizer Eugene Debs. There were 30 workers killed. Eugene Debs was arrested, and all the workers who supported the strike were fired and blacklisted. This was earlier in the month of July, and people were a little upset at that. And so, oh boy, late in July of 1894, he proclaimed a holiday for workers. But that is not the first existence of Labor Day. Labor Day was not given. Labor Day was taken. You don't get things for free. The people have been organizing and asking for unions and helping to help workers for a long time. Labor Day first started in 1882. There was a man named Matthew McGuire. Remember that name? Matthew McGuire. He was a New York machinist and a organizer for higher wages and shorter hours. And he was the first one that called for a mammoth festival parade and picnic to celebrate the workers. Mainly, he just wanted a day off. This, remember, was a time when workplaces generally were ruled with an iron hand. They were 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and that was for $2 a day, folks, $2 a day. So Matthew McGuire was one of those people that kind of organized and got this going. He got people to start marching down the street and marching toward the New York City Hall. And the day culminated with a frolicking festival attended by 25,000 workers and people who supported them. And here's a note. I'm getting this information from the Hightower Lowdown, information from Jim Hightower, a real great person to read. He's a good writer. Okay. And he has a little footnote here. Note to present-day organizers, if you want people to turn out for your rally, following this 1882 model of the first Labor Days, do provide beer, music, food, and fun, so people will come.
A picnic.
Yes, yes.
So good that's idea.
First
we might
Labor
as well
Day.
Enjoy ourselves while we're protesting.
Of course, of course. I think Molly Ivan said something like that.
Yeah,
too.
It's like so here's let's the Labor have a big
Day.
Party.
Here's
nothing
the Labor
makes
Day.
People stop working like a party.
Yes, good. So I said we're going to explore the joy of root beer. Will Bonfilio is with us today. He's an MFA candidate, creative writing in creative writing and the environment. He really fine person. He writes plays and he drinks root beer. Yes, he does. Welcome, Will.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us, what is root beer? Why is root beer not beer? And why is root beer just plain old not soda pop?
Well, it's really a historically rooted beverage. Back when humans were still traveling by boat and didn't have the commodities that they have now. They had to transport people for extremely long amounts of time. They needed sustenance. They needed a beverage. They needed to stay hydrated. And unfortunately, water was very difficult to travel, especially overseas, because you store it in something like a wooden barrel and it starts to rot out the barrel. It becomes contaminated. The water will actually rot. So
and it doesn't taste very well.
No, well, that's the idea. So A number of travelers needed to find a beverage that could withstand
besides
long
whiskey.
Days. Right, exactly. Well, that's part of
or
it.
Or gin.
They actually did turn to alcoholic beverages, and you know, one of the beverages that was developed was grog. And when Americans began to people started to colonize America, what they found is they tried to recreate that grog, but had to work with a number of different herbs and wheats that weren't available, that they had never encountered before being from Europe. So what happened was all these different recipes for grog and for alcoholic beverages developed. One particularly utilized the sassafras root, the root of the sassafras tree.
And the sassafras only American originally?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's indigenous to North America.
Root beer started here. Oh, goodness.
Yes, it did. Now, in particular, root beer, it developed over a long period of time. But one of the founders, so to speak, one of the integral creators of root beer was this guy Charles Hyers, who was a philanthropist, and he was also a self-styled inventor in the early 1900s. And on his honeymoon, he traveled to a little farm in Delaware where he was served a sassafras tea. And he thought that it was a marvelous beverage, one that he thought should be shared with a wider community. And at the Philadelphia Centennial of 1908, he brought along this beverage, this powder that could be mixed with water to create
was it
a beverage.
Just ground sassafras?
Root? It was a combination of sassafras and a number of different herbs in there, including rosemary and a few others that
So was it reputed to have any medical benefits?
Of course. You know that all those early beverages were reputed to be medicinal in some form. But, you know, he marketed this powdered beverage, and that was Hyers root beer, and it slowly developed over time and started to shift. And after,
but it was not carbonated. At
not
that
not
point.
Yet. No, that came along with A&W chain, who were taking a leaf from Coca-Cola and started serving these carbonated pleasure beverages, as they called them.
Carbonated pleasure event. Say that again, Will.
Carbonated pleasure beverages.
There you go.
And Charles Hyers jumped on that bandwagon and said, well, my beverage can be a carbonated pleasure beverage too. And and that sort of brought about root beer. And it wasn't – while Hyers was really credited with creating root beer as it were, A&W, the founders of A&W really took it to a new commercial and popular level, especially with the advent of Prohibition in the late 19-teens, early 1920s, because alcohol had been banned and because a number of people in the United States were looking for a similar beverage to relax with, root beer got its title. In fact, when Hyers first was producing it, he was calling it
root tea. It's made from roots,
right? Tea, yeah.
Sassafras root. What other roots are in it?
Well, there are a number of different roots. Birch root and birch bark certainly have been integral.
There's also birch beer, right? Mm-hmm. Which is non-alcoholic usually.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Before it was called root beer, what did Charles Hyers call it?
He called it root tea.
Oh, tea. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I see. The beer too, huh? Marketing. Okay.
Right. So once Prohibition came, he just styled it beer because, you know. And that's actually, it's funny because that's how I got into root beer. I saw my grandfather drinking beer and I was like, I want to have beer too, little five-year-old me. And of course that.
And that's, is that when they put the carbonation in it then?
Yeah, around the night, around
that's
19.
That's what made it beer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, technically the name change came before the carbonation of it. It was styled root beer simply in response to the culture that was going on around it. They needed a kind of alcoholic beverage to compensate for the loss of real alcoholic beverages.
Mm-hmm. And this was going on in America. Was root beer popular in Europe or other places too? Was it imported or is it a brand new idea from America or what?
Root beer is definitely an American commodity and it hasn't really taken off. In fact, a lot of Europeans don't drink root beer at all. They find it to be a little bit bitter, a little bit astringent. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also very sweet too.
Yes, that's true. But in fact, in some places, it's the culture that has really dictated where root beer has taken off.
But Europeans also have their own traditions of medicinal concoctions that are beverages. They're just different flavors. But you know, there's a lot of mint ones, a lot of anise ones, a lot of
– And cocoa too. That was huge.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think the second largest market for root beer outside of the United States is actually Australia. And they have a couple of what does that say? But they have a couple of beverages. I was just thinking I could have brought one with me, but I haven't stumbled across it recently.
You know, I think in New Zealand I've also had some sort of medicinally flavored sodas, as it were, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again. What was it you said that I couldn't say?
Carbonated pleasure beverages.
Carbonated pleasure beverages.
Oh, I do like that. Well, Will, you are a good person to ask all these questions about, because of all things that people collect, you collect root beers.
That's true. I've had I've tried about 170 different kinds, and I'm a huge nerd about it. I keep pretty extensive Microsoft Excel documents with just, you know, where
tasting
they're from.
Notes.
Oh, yeah. Talk about what flavors dominate, you know, the colors, how prolific the head is.
Tell me what kind of flavor descriptors do you use in your documents?
Well, I always examine for what predominantly shines because just as with any beverage, there's always a complex sort of layering of flavors that's going on. So what really stands out to me is the flavor that dominates that layer and also the
tell me some of the words that you use.
Well, one of the big things that I'm always looking as far as evaluating a drink is how balanced it is, the sort of levels of flavors, whether it's too bitter. And if it is, that's an unbalanced drink. If it's too sweet, same thing. So I'm looking for just that right amount.
And what's the bitterness that's in root beers?
Well, the bitterness can come from a number of different flavorings. Licorice, certainly. But anise also.
Licorice, anise, sassafras, what other?
Well, I think any good root beer has to have a degree of vanilla, just as far as the creaminess to it. And that really, my favorite root beers have always been ones that.
Well, I find vanilla it's always kind of ties the flavors together.
It does.
In anything that you're using it in.
Yeah, it's just such a sweet sort of, it's like a mixer, you know, it just brings everything, so it just smooths it all out.
Yes, it's an undertone that makes everything harmonious.
Vanilla is not a root. Vanilla is a
bean.
It's a bean. But it looks sort
of
rootish.
It's an orchid bean, actually.
Oh, it's an orchid.
Is that right?
I know it's really fancy and hard to gather and very.
And there are different vanillas, too. Right, there's Madagascar vanilla. There's certainly Mexican vanilla.
And do they all come in that sort of string that little flake, because it's a very long and narrow sort of pod.
It's a seed pod.
I'm gonna make a guess here and say yes, because they're all vanillas, but different. You know, the origin of it makes it slightly – well, also, like, for example, if you buy Mexican vanilla, some of it has to do with the way it's processed, because vanilla, as you're usually buying not just the beans, you're buying the extract. So whatever they're extracting it with also changes the flavor. And then there's the double-strength vanilla and vanilla powder, so lots of vanillas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very good. So – what are some of the adventures you've had searching root beers? It seems like sort of a bulky thing to collect. And how do you keep from drinking them? I think the bottles are wonderful. Do you buy them specifically to drink, or do you like save them as collector's items?
No, I definitely drink them. And I did used to save the bottles as just sort of collector's items. But this past summer, actually, I really got – I had to move several times in the period.
That'll do it.
Yeah. And I got – yeah. So my collection is down just to my four favorites.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Which are?
Well, there's a St. Arnold's in Texas, which is bottled out of Austin, Texas, which is a lovely, lovely root beer. Very well balanced, but also has a strong vanilla flavor to it. That's a wonderful beverage, and I've tried very hard to come across it more than the one time I did.
Can you mail order it?
You certainly can, but the problem with buying root beers or any beverage really through the mail is that it's so heavy. The glassware is just very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an expensive endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my other favorites is Hank's Philadelphia style, but there are so many other good root beers out there that are just really either well balanced or very unique. My favorite root beer is not actually the best root beer I've had, but it's my favorite because it's so different. It's called Boylan's, and it's bottled out of New Jersey.
B-O-Y-L-A-N-S. Uh-huh. And what's different about it?
Well, it doesn't achieve the same sort of pleasure with balance that the other root beers does. Instead, it puts a lot of focus on what it calls a traditional flavoring. So the licorice and anise flavors are very, very strong. It's not as creamy, but it's also not as carbonated, which allows for a much smoother taste. It's a wonderfully unique brew, and it actually was a source of much comfort for me. I remember going through college and just being really unhappy my first year at college. And I remember one day, my day was almost ruined because I had bought some Boylan's root beer, and it was totally undercarbonated. There was just nothing to it. And I wrote to the company and I said, hey, I just spent, you know, $5 on this 4-pack, and, you know, it's not even carbonated. And it was a really snooty message on my part, but they said, you know, we're so sorry you had that experience. They mailed me a 12-pack, just a big box, came in the mail. I went down to the campus post office, and they were like, there's a huge package back here for you. They brought it out, heavy package, took it up. 12 root beers just in a little styrofoam, beautifully packed.
Oh, great customer service.
It was marvelous. And it totally I remember.
And it had more bubbles in it?
Oh, yeah. And I can never think about just the joy of root beer, the joy of drinking, without thinking about how wonderful it was to bring that into the cafeteria after getting it from the post office and saying, guys, look what I got. You have to try this. This is a fantastic root beer.
Oh.
And sharing it with friends. And yeah, it was – so they're fantastic. But there are a number of really wonderful, wonderful root beers out there. And just as – well, yeah, just as with any beverage.
And what – of what's available in our neighborhood, so to speak, what is your preferred –
well, I just did the little advertisement for Wheatsfield, but Wheatsfield carries an organic brand of root beer called Virgil's, which is really a fantastic
Virgil's
beverage.
Is your favorite of what we can get here?
I would imagine it's right up there with the top few.
I will take a shout out for that root beer. I like it. Also, they make – I don't know if this is related to root beer, but a cream soda.
Yes.
Which is – that's kind of a vanilla-ish sort of thing. And I like cream soda, but root beer is good.
I do too.
Cream soda is a derivative of root beer, actually.
Okay.
A lot
mm-hmm,
of people
mm-hmm. –
like in A&W, when A&W came out – A&W is actually credited with inventing cream soda because, you know, they have – their root beer was actually much more and remains a very, you know, it has those very strong tones of vanilla. And a lot of people really took to that and said, we love this. Can we just get the vanilla?
This leads to, do you know egg creams?
You're
from New York.
Oh. Yes.
Tell us about egg creams. This is something I learned when I went to college in New York.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Honestly, Donna, I think you'd be more the authority. All I know about egg creams is that they're used with the egg whites, and they're mixed in there. But I know very little.
This was a long time ago, but in New York, they probably still make egg creams. It's you go into little, usually places that sell tobacco, and they have just a small amount of beverages, and this is a long time ago, but they take the traditional ice cream soda glass, and they must put vanilla syrup in it, carbonated water, and the egg white. I'm guessing that that's about all it is, and then they mix it with a long spoon, and you just drink it, something like that.
I know there are some other flavors. There's a beverage company out of New York called
Jeff's. Right, that would have been a vanilla egg cream.
Right, and they make I love root beers, but I'll try all the other kinds of sodas. But they make one of the most fantastic orange cream sodas, Jeff's Egg Orange Creams.
Oh, right. Maybe it had milk in it, too, a little dash of milk. What's an egg or an orange cream?
Oh, it's just like an orange cream soda, except I remember tasting it and thinking, this is one of the most wonderful beverages I've ever had. It's smoother. It's very, very creamy. I mean, it really puts the cream in the egg cream.
Well, and these were always made at the moment, you know, it's not something you bought in a bottle or, you know.
I can only imagine then how good it must be in person at the soda fountain.
Oh, yes, must be. What's the name of that company that made your favorite orange soda?
Jeff's, it's called. Jeff's. Pretty simple.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You grew up in, you said you grew up in Rochester area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite childhood root beer? I mean, what was the go-to root beer when you were growing up?
Well, one of the nice things about growing up where I did is it's home to a chain of restaurants called Tom Walls, which makes their own root beer. It's a little similar to Culver's in the Midwest. A number of burgers, and they'll serve them on these very small plates. But the root beer that they make was its real calling card. Back in the 1940s and 50s, it was
right. People drank
of upstate New York.
More root beer and less Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola.
Is that right?
It's an old thing.
I know that root beer was often preferred through the early 20th century because it was sweeter than Coca-Cola,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit, easier to ingest.
So was this Tom Walls restaurant, it was only available at the restaurant, or did they bottle it?
No, only available at the restaurant.
Oh!
And that was a pretty smart move on their part because it really brings in a lot of customers, and it remains a staple of upstate New York.
It still is.
Yeah.
So if we are ever there. Oh, I'll look
and
for
then,
that.
And then when does the A&W – okay, picture me, 1956, pre-driving, but – and this is a little town, southern Illinois, but I'm sure every town had them. The A&W root beer stand, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, mom and pop say, okay, kids, we're going out for dinner tonight. We go to the A&W stand. You roll down the windows. The car hop comes out. She puts a tray, usually on the driver's side. You get hot dogs and then root beer, which comes in, of course, frosty mugs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did that all happen, and how did every place in America get one?
Well, that was A&W's influence again. I really wish I had looked up...
This is way pre-McDonald's, too, I have to say.
Yeah. I really wish I had looked up the creators of or the founders of A&W because they deserve a lot of credit on this show, especially. They're like my heroes. but they actually had this idea, you know, we have this drink. We're going to pair it with true American food.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going all through like the late 1940s up through, you know, that it really took off in the 50s. These drive-in restaurants, these drive-in stands, root beer stands really took off. And A&W certainly wasn't alone, but they really developed this wide chain that spanned across the country. And it was a huge success. It became a
Did you have one in your town?
Oh, of course.
And in high school, when we could drive, it became the loop. You drive down Main Street, you loop through the A&W to see if anybody you know is hanging out there, if there's a party happening in all the cars. If not, you pass on back and you go down back around the square, and it's a drag. Mm. You know, you just keep going round and up and down, slowly cruising.
A&W, one of the better inventions of the century, I do believe. I want to take this time to mention that you are listening to KHOI FM 89.1. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a tune called It Ain't the Heat, It's the Humidity. Yes, that's what this was called. With a little bit of a traditional tune called Booth Shot Lincoln in front of it. Booth Shot Lincoln. Oh, politics can get pretty nasty, but then it ain't the heat, it's the humidity. We are talking the end of summer here. We are talking root beer with Will Bonfilio. And Donna, you have something to say about egg creams.
I've whipped out my iPad here and I did a little check on egg creams. Apparently, it has neither egg nor cream in it.
No.
It is milk.
Oh.
Milk and syrup. So chocolate or vanilla. You stir vigorously the syrup and the milk, or perhaps half and half. Ina Garten says half and half. And then you pour in the soda. Now, this is could originally only be done at soda fountains and had to be done by a soda jerk.
Why jerk?
It's what we always call them. Do you know the origin of that?
I don't.
That's where the jerk.
Fountain
tap?
Yeah, it has something to do with the tap.
Where the carbonation.
Why are these things stuck in my head? Yes, I do remember that.
Does that mean that you are a bit of a root beer jerk?
I suppose I am. Although I'm more of just a regular jerk. First and foremost.
Nobody, self-effacement here.
Nobody who brings root beer is a jerk. Brought some things. Tell us about what we've got here.
I did. Well, I decided that it would be a little bit – I mean, it's well and good to talk about root beer, but the real joy of root beer is being able to share it. And what I have here – one of the original root beers. This is Heyer's, and this is not the same recipe as it was first made with back in the early 1906, the Philadelphia Centennial. But it is, it remains a staple of the beverage world.
It is kind of a standard root beer flavor, isn't it?
Yes.
The classic.
And it does have, you know, that same sort
very herbaceous or rooty, as it were, I guess.
Beautiful. No, that's beautiful. That's one of my words that I use when I'm writing the critiques. But yes, Hires is definitely has that root beer flavoring to it, you know, and I say that using
the roots.
Air quotes.
Yeah, you get the botanical.
Right, exactly. And it does have that complexity. There's less of a vanilla flavor, and that's sort of the claim that the company stands by, that it's an old beverage, an old-timey beverage that they hope will, you know, they hope represents.
Now, are there some that are not as highly sweetened as this?
Absolutely, and I have a couple right here with me. One that I have, for example, is a brand called Sprecher's, which is made out of Washington.
Ta! The little pop. There you go.
Sprecher's.
Sprecher's. You got it. And this is one that back in 2006 was recognized by the New York Times as being the best root beer you could buy in America.
Oh, my.
So it's got quite a claim to it. But this is one that's a little bit less sweet, in part because it's not made with high fructose corn syrup, as so many root beers today are.
Yes,
very nice.
Another American invention.
Yes, there we go. Perhaps not as wonderful as root beer in itself, but.
Oh, now this one is much more vanilla-ish, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it does have, I mean, it is a very sweet brew, but at the same time, it is a little less. It does have a little less of that cutting, sharp edge to it that you'll sometimes find with mass-produced beverages.
Now, as Hires, do you think it's the sarsaparilla that pushes that root flavor higher?
It definitely is the sarsaparilla flavoring.
Mm-hmm.
Hires is a beverage, like many others in today's day and age, that uses a lot of artificial flavoring.
Oh, of course.
It is a sarsaparilla flavor they're going for, but whether or not it is actually sassafras root is probably guess.
Sassafras
flavoring.
There's so many flavoring. That's Sprecher's, Sprecher. And I always thought that the logo of this root beer company was a crow, but it is not a crow. I look a little closer, and it's a griffin. It's a crow's head on sort of a monkey's body with claws, with the tail and wings. So it's maybe a flying monkey. No, but it is a bird or a griffin of some sort. And whatever it is fine root beer.
Mm. This is actually the brew itself is actually. We're going to talk in a little bit about alcoholic root beers. And alcohol in general. But Sprecher's actually also makes a hard root beer, and I'll be sure to mention that. But the last – before we get to that, the last root beer I have is one that's Iowa-made. It's Great River Brewery's River Rat Root Beer, and this is available over in Davenport. It comes in a tall boy can.
So is it made in Davenport?
It is indeed, yes.
Our own Iowa root beer.
That's right.
But you can only get it in the eastern part of the state?
Well, that's where I found it. Typically what I'll do is wherever I'm traveling, I'll make a stop around. There are a number of really great websites out there about, you know, where you can find certain root beers and breweries that make their own root beer. This is one that I found via one of those websites, and it
this one has almost goes up to a lemony octave or something. Something like that.
It is a little, and I think there is a little bit of citrus in there, but it is also more bitter than the other two that we've tried, which I imagine will be.
Oh, I love bitters.
Yeah.
I'm on a whole bitter
stick.
It is.
So, yeah. It does have more in your nose or
it makes it a little more refreshing somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And less sweet.
And also it has less of a body to it. You know, you talk about those other two root beers that we've had, they're very complex, they're very heavy. They're sipping root beers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll usually try and take some time to define whether a root beer is more sipping or more for guzzling or, you know, better suited for root beer floats. But this is definitely one that you can drink a little bit easier.
Right, might quench your thirst a little more. Now, I have to say, growing up, my mother's side of the family was from southeast Missouri. They call it sarsaparilla,
mm-hmm.
And also our sarsaparilla sody.
Mm-hmm.
Sody?
Sody.
Oh, really?
Right. Down south, they didn't say pop. They called it sody.
Mm, there you go. Well, I grew up with pop, but it was pop.
Pop is northern.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And the root beers that you shared with us here are really, they're lovely. They're not as sweet as A&W, which is everybody kind of knows what A&W is like. That's very sweet.
Yeah, but I do want to put a blob of vanilla ice cream in mine.
Oh,
I just can't.
Oh, my.
That.
I grew up with there was I think it was made – it was available in Madison, I know, Madison, Wisconsin. It was called Dad's Root Beer. Maybe you can still get Dad's Root Beer.
You still can, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
That's it.
And I was always rather disappointed when that would be served because I – it was more – it was not as sweet as A&W, and that was kind of my – when you're 8 years old, that's kind of your go-to.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Dad's is more of a – one of these more bitter. And I thought,
so it's an adult root beer?
Well, maybe. But or at least when I always got that and saw that can, I thought, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, well, you'd be polite anyway. You say thank you and you have it. But I really like it now.
I'm the same way. I have my preferences.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
I think I might like a not quite so sweet one. So tell us about the alcoholic versions.
Well, the alcoholic root beers, they're often, you know, I think they're capitalizing on a little bit of a return to form. You know, so many people enjoyed root beer because it's not alcoholic. But now, you know, there are some people who would mix it and would create cocktails. And this is some beverage companies just getting ahead of the fact. And even here in Ames, we have a couple alcoholic root beers available to us. Like I said, Sprecher's makes an alcoholic root beer. And the Griffin is much more noticeable on that.
So do you find them in the beer section of wherever you're shopping?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But there are a number of other alcoholic root beers that are available in Ames and I imagine around Iowa, including one brand called Not Your Father's Root Beer, which I actually tried for the first time this past summer coming back from New York.
And what do we think?
That one's a very I have sort of a love-hate relationship with alcoholic root beers because having grown up with root beer as a non-alcoholic beverage and having it represent something of my childhood and something so comforting and beloved to me, once you throw in an additional ingredient, it's almost like a
a classicist here.
That's exactly it. I'm a snob. And that being said, however, it does add an extra element of sort of maltiness to it, which is enjoyable.
Does it come in a can or a bottle or a
– The ones that I've had have been bottled. Yes.
And is the alcoholic content along the lines of a beer?
It is, yes, around 4 to 6 about alcohol by
volume. Oh, it's very low.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The best, however, that I've had has been the one that has been able to achieve the most balance, which is Coney Island Root Beer, which only just this past summer went on sale at Hy-Vee and also was available at Wheatfield.
Oh, we can get it here in town?
Yes, we can.
In the liquor section?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like I said, it's just very balanced. It's very vanilla. You know, that's the dominant flavor there. And I was actually just out doing karaoke the other night with a friend, and he ordered one of those. And he said, this is a dessert. I could drink this all night. And he did.
Did the karaoke get really good or really bad?
Both.
Okay. The charms of root beer.
The charms of karaoke.
Yes. And what about have you personally made cocktails with it? Or are you so enamored of it just on its own merits? Or
like you said, I'm a classist. So, no, I haven't really experimented much. I haven't gone
further
than ice
cream. I'll get on that one and report back to you.
Yeah,
now,
sure.
And then what about root beer floats?
Oh.
No?
That's my bread and butter.
Oh, okay.
I love root beer floats.
So do tell us, are there any tips you need to know besides, like, do you put the float in with not a lot of head on it, or do you put the ice cream in it a certain way? I mean, what makes the best root beer float, in your opinion?
Well, the best root beer float, no matter how you make it, is going to come down to the ingredients, a strong root beer and a strong ice cream. And you could make it really depends. The root beer really depends on what you're looking for. Vanilla ice cream will add a lot of cream, so you don't necessarily need a creamy root beer.
No, you don't. You might want to use that really sassafras-y one.
That's right, yeah. So I mentioned Boylan's, which has a very strong licorice flavor and less of a vanilla flavor. That makes my favorite root beers. It's just absolutely marvelous. But what I typically do is I'll just make it with a little, put a little ice cream in a glass, pour the root beer on top, and
the ice cream goes in first.
For me.
Okay.
Because what happens is there's actually a chemical reaction in there. The sugars sort of oppose each other and they come out with this, you know, the carbonation just sort of explodes. You get this head that really just flows over the glass, and it's a head that doesn't really dissipate. It just becomes a lot more airy. So root beer floats can be a bit of a mess, especially if you're 9 years old.
And, well, but that's the fun.
Oh, that's true. But, you know, with a mother like mine, you learn there are places for messes, and her kitchen is not one.
So you should make it over the sink or something.
Oh, that's true. But 9 years old, you can't really reach over the sink either. So
what on the porch?
The
that's exactly
porch.
It. There you
okay.
go.
I know. That's fine. That's fine.
So, yeah, it's – I think just with a beer also, you want to delay that chemical reaction. You don't want to aid it by pouring it in quickly and, you know, having
right,
that
no, then you had up all air.
Right, right, right. So it's a very slow additional process. You're just sort of
pouring it on a tilt. So you pour the beer in slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, are there any other combinations besides vanilla and root beer that you might recommend, or is that just the best?
I remember being maybe 14 years old and just really, really wanting a root beer float. And I prepared my float. And at that time, I was making them by putting the root beer in first. And I, you know, dirtied up the glass by putting the root beer in it. And I went in the freezer, and I realized there was no vanilla ice cream. All we had was chocolate. And I said, well, what the heck? You know, let's just go for it. And I remember just defending it so hard to my parents and my friend who was over and saying, yeah, this is great. This is better. No, it wasn't. I was just trying to save
face. Okay, so it's really just vanilla.
I mean, I haven't tried everything, though. I mean, but French vanilla, that's really that's a very, very good combination.
Oh, I don't think you could go wrong. Except maybe I don't know. Maybe mint chocolate chip wouldn't be so good. I don't know.
That probably, yeah. Oof,
that would be an awful lot of flavors mixing
awful
around
lot
in there
all together. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do find when we're making the beer floats, of course, there's any number of beers, but like chocolate stout with chocolate ice cream has turned out to be quite good.
Now this is something new to me. I've never heard of beer floats. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Oh. Well, we've been raving on about them almost for a whole year. Do pick up a chocolate stout, or some of them have coffee stouts.
I have one in my fridge right now.
Okay. Take a scoop of chocolate or vanilla ice cream and make it just like you would a root beer float. And it's yummy. It's not quite as sweet, and of course has more bitters in it, which I love.
Right, you're all about
that. It's kind of the adult... I would say it's the adult ice cream float.
All right.
Definitely. Wait. Don't wait till winter. Do it now.
Don had to talk me into that flavor combination, but it's a dandy. It's a dandy. Yes.
I know. It sounds funny, but when you taste it, you go, I mean, why not?
Why not? You're listening to KHOI. You can find out more information on KHOIFM.org. Listen to this station. Support this station. Donna likes waltzes. She turned me on to beer floats. And this is a waltz for Donna. Believe it or not, it's called Ms. P's Waltz.
Thank you.
We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been talking about root beer. Oh, what a nice thing to talk about. And I don't know if it pairs well with this, but Donna's going to talk about oxtail tureen.
Oh, Donna got a new cookbook. I can't help it. I just have to buy cookbooks sometimes. They're kind of like, this one's a big one with lots of pictures, like a coffee table book. But the pictures are very instructive, and it is called In the Charcuterie. Now, it's written by a couple of people that have maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I spotted this stuff at the San Francisco market. They have a business called the Fatted Calf.
Oh, so charcuterie means?
Well, in France, a charcuterie is a store that kind of sells prepared foods, almost like what we would call a delicatessen. But in France, the traditional things are, you know, pâtés and that kind of thing that you would just pick up for a picnic or take home for dinner, grated carrot salad, celery remoulade. So what it is all about is basically prepared meats. And we're not talking bologna here. The subtitle is The Fatted Calf's Guide to Making Sausage, Salumi, Pâtés, Roast Confit, and Other Meaty Goods. So.
And you're right. The pictures in this thing are pretty lovely. And this is not a recipe book for vegetarians.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there is an accoutrement section, which has bread and butter pickles and classic cucumber dills and pickled onion rings and things like that, because, of course, you have to eat these things with it.
Of course, but the gorgeous pictures of hanging meat and how to make these sausages. And tell us about
oxtail. Well, I want to sing, you know, because we have such good meat in Iowa. And, you know, it doesn't have to be all steaks and chops and hamburgers. I want to sing the praises of tureens, which are – you can make vegetable tureens as well. But they're actually really easy to make because it's based in gelatin. Now, whether you use the packaged gelatin or you actually boil your own gelatin out of – like this recipe calls for a pig's trotter. Now, I have been – even though we grow more pigs than any place on the planet, do you think I can find a pig's trotter?
Oh,
no.
I wonder where they all go.
Oh, into the glue pot, I suppose.
Oh, too bad.
Or you know, to make gelatin. Anyway, I did boil a lot of bones and cartilage things, but you can just as easily use a powdered gelatin. So basically what you're doing in this recipe, I used oxtails, which are very gelatinous. But
and we do have oxtails. You can get oxtails. Okay.
Yeah, you have to work a little bit at it, but you can get them. And it's good for using any kind of stewed meat. Like you could make a beef tureen. You could make a fish tureen. You could make, which is common, any kind of, you use a stewed meat and you kind of crumble it, you know, shred it. And then this one, this particular one has the stock from the boiled oxtail, which was very rich. And I didn't season it a lot. I think I put bay leaf and peppercorns and, of course, salt. So it's really getting the meaty flavor. So you've got a rich stock from boiling the oxtails, the shredded meat off the oxtails, kind of chopped up. Then you take the stock, and I added even more powdered gelatin because you want it to gel, you know, you want it to have a little firmness.
Oh, you are serving
it. Taste it.
It is here in a bowl.
Yeah, this is a little tureen. Now, traditionally, a tureen has a kind of a loaf shape. So this tureen was mixed with the gelatin and fresh parsley. A good bit of fresh parsley went into this, and then all those shredded meats and salt and pepper. Rick. So there are several things you can do with tureens. Like this one, you just spoon it out, put it in a piece of bread. And the recipe did suggest serving it with a caper mustard.
Oh, mustard would be good. It's like in the mouth, it feels like a meatloaf that's really soft, mm-hmm, which means mm-hmm. It's sort of a spreadable sort of thing.
It is spreadable.
But it has, it's very, very tasty. And it's in a, it's, it isn't served in a little bowl. Is it?
Well, this is actually a ramekin.
A ramekin. Any, is it ever thick enough that you can unmold it?
Yes.
Aha.
This is the thing you can take. Like, if you take a small loaf pan, if you want, like I made several, you know, small ones. So, like, each of my neighbors got one, and we brought one here, you know, because you don't need a lot of it. The method in the charcuterie book, which I think is a good one, is have some more, Will.
Thank you.
Is you line it with – you line the pan with like a saran wrap type of thing and make overlapping. So, you know, so then you pour the gelatin and the meat into it. It molds up like Jell-O. Then when you want it to take it out of the tin, you lift – the extra pieces of the saran wrap, and you just kind of flip it over onto a plate. Alternatively, the old-fashioned way, of course, is just like unmolding Jell-O.
Right, putting it a little
warm
water.
And you do pour some of the straight gelatin broth in the bottom, and then you put some of the meat, which has been well mixed with the parsley and the rest of the gelatin. So you can, the more gelatin you use, the firmer terrine you can get. And then you can slice it at the table. You can also make asparagus terrine, or you can run a piece of asparagus through the middle of it. So when you slice it, you have little polka dots in it, or it's endless. But the terrine methodology is, it's very simple and usually quite impressive at the table.
Wonderful. Mention that book again.
Oh, yes. It's called In the Charcuterie, and the authors are Taylor, oh boy, Boetticher, Boetticher, and Toponia Miller.
Miller, finally. There you go.
Think of the fatted calf. I can always remember. That's the name of it. I'm sure you could Google the fatted calf and you would come up with this book. And I'm sure it's going to give me endless pleasures all winter long. I also tried a liver mousse with whipped cream, which I will have to tell you about at a later date.
Very good. Oh, we have... we have oxtail terrine, and that's something I probably wouldn't try myself, but here we are. I would try it. What do you think, Will?
I think the parsley adds a very nice element to it.
Too.
I like it on top of there. It's definitely what makes the dish is definitely the texture as far as I'm concerned, because I don't know the last – I don't know if I've ever had a meat dish that was more gelatinous. I mean, the closest I think Lana pointed out might be meatloaf. So it's a new experience for me.
Head cheese is an American thing that most people have had, which is made with gelatin in a loaf
kind
form.
Of a loose sausage kind of, but gelatin, yeah. Well, I'm sure there must be a root beer that would pair with oxtail terrine.
Oh, I don't know. maybe root beer float for dessert.
Oh, that sounds
in different
good.
Courses.
That's well, good. That's always good for a dessert.
Yeah.
Any other good things you wish to say about root beer?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I could talk for a while about them. Could you give me a prompt, perhaps?
Oh, you will have
anything
to,
you're curious to know?
You will have to come back. There's so much to talk about root beer. That's great. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks to our special guest, William Bonfilio, who just brought us all sorts of good tastes. We talked about root beer. We talked about oxtail terrine. There's music by the band Contratopia. We'll go out with something called Sweet Music and Why Ted Flies. Yes, it's a band from Decorah, Iowa. Yes, it is. Engineering by Rick Morrison. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Listen to this great show and tell your friends. Support this radio station. Eat good food and enjoy life.